Welcome to Gold Star Classroom, the podcast where our panelists go back to school. We'll grade them on their answers to a variety of general knowledge and trivia questions. They don't know what we're going to ask, and we don't know what they're going to say. The student with the highest grade at the end of the class will win the coveted classroom prize, the Golden Banana. I'm your host and headmaster, Professor Jerry Jaffe. Welcome to today's episode of Gold Star Classroom. This is your host and headmaster, the professor, Dr. Jerry Jaffe. We're recording today's episode at Tolt's Place and Mentor, and it's part of the Cleveland Comedy Festival 2013.
Woo! Woo! Yeah!
Comedy!
It's my pleasure to introduce today's students. Sitting immediately on my left
and
is
touching
the,
your leg.
Is the formidable Dr. Andy Meredith.
Hello, everybody. Thank you. Thank you.
Sitting on my right is a comedian from Columbus, Justin Golak.
Thank you. Thank you, Professor. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for attending class today.
No problem.
Attendance is the first goal of a good grade.
Nice.
You won't pass if you're absent.
Nice.
Sitting directly across from me is the comic book collector, Rob Coleman.
Yes, yes, yes. Superman is dating Wonder Woman in comics now. Check it out. It's awesome. The world is perfect.
Well, that's a waste of a good lasso, though, because Superman never lies.
Well, Wonder Woman does.
Oh! Well, she does now, apparently. And on my far left, Ohio's dirtiest comic and host of Muhammad Radio, Jeremy Shear.
That's me. Hi, everybody.
He smells good, too.
Yeah, for once.
I hope that translates over the radio, Jeremy's aroma.
I once had a girl hug me for an inappropriate amount of time because she said I smelled like incense.
Aww. A romantic and tender moment.
Yes.
Minus 5 points for over-sentimentality.
Enchantment
despair. Now, I welcome today's class. It is my job to ask you a range of questions across the great breadth of human knowledge. And by your answers, not by that, Dr. Meredith, I mean the accuracy of your answers, you may or may not receive a good grade.
It's not just how awesome my answers are?
Definitely not. Because awesomeness and truth are synonyms. Speaking of answering and questions, our first topic is sort of apropos, if not ironic. I wonder who here can tell me actually what trivia is.
Trivial.
Yeah, that's what my answer is going to be.
So I'll BS take comparison of knowledge of quirky facts.
I'm going to say minutia.
Minutia, trivial, quirky, comparison. Mr. Coleman, would you like to contribute to the conversation?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Trivia is like Activia, but it's less sweet. I don't have a clue. It's probably Latin or something like that. Everything is Latin.
Finally, someone has said something constructive. The word trivia comes from the Latin word trivium.
Exactly. Oh, well.
Which means what?
What do you think it means?
It
don't
means
you know your
really
Latin root
trivial?
Words?
It means really bad band from Colorado.
Like all bands.
If we were in Colorado, you would get an A for that answer, but since we are not, you get an F.
I'm glad I dropped out.
You've probably heard of tricycles.
Yes.
Can you think of any other words that start with TRI?
Triumvirate.
Trimester.
Trimester. All of which mean?
All important if you get a girl pregnant. depending on your state law.
Yes.
Triclide.
Three. I have no idea what a triclide is.
It's a monster from Super Mario Brothers.
Wait, which one?
It's the guy with the three snake heads.
Snake heads. See, three. Three, three. That is the root word of trivia, or trivium, comes from classical Latin education, of which there were three things every citizen was supposed to know.
Reading, writing, and arithmetic.
Sadly, American education has slightly dumbed it down. Grammar, logic, and rhetoric.
Oh, okay.
That's the trivium of Roman education.
Grammar, logic, and rhetoric?
I don't know if I want to learn logic from a lot of American teachers.
Yeah.
That's probably why they don't teach it.
I'm not taking my cues from a fallen empire.
Well, in medieval Latin, that foundational education was considered very important, and we already had the phrase, which all of you have heard, and some of us have paid for, liberal arts.
Mm-hmm. You'll never stop paying.
Never. You can't. You can't get rid of it. It's okay.
Well, student loan debt in this country is up to $1 trillion. Well, it will undoubtedly be the cause of the next recession.
And you can't get rid of it, even if you go bankrupt. I wish I would have just got a credit card and went on vacations or bought a car.
There's got to be a much cheaper way to get drunk than going to college.
There is. There's any other way.
It's called being a woman.
Well, somebody didn't have a liberal arts education.
What does the word liberal in liberal arts education mean?
Freedom.
Very close, but freedom, yes. Liberal, not in the political sense. Yep, I got one. I was 1 second ahead of you on that.
Is it from the Latin Meredith. Word liber?
Yes.
Nice.
Not as in book, though, but as in free, as Mr. Coleman was saying.
Yes.
So a free man, as a citizen, in the Greek or Roman democratic sense, had a responsibility to be properly educated, therefore the liberal arts and the trivium. Of course, naturally, we don't speak medieval Latin anymore. So I did look up the Webster's definition of the word trivia, which also no one has said yet, the basic dictionary definition. What do you think, Andy?
I think that just trying to figure out what it means is kind of trivial.
Indeed. You picked up on that, did you? Oh, the irony. That'll be in the next class, don't worry.
Is the Webster's Dictionary useless knowledge you spit out at bars to win tabs?
No, but yes. The most basic dictionary definition of trivia is unimportant facts or details that are not well known.
Like my daddy.
See, that's why I always thought that the term Bible trivia was kind of it's like you're saying the same thing twice.
Biblical trivia.
It's kind of redundant.
Plus 10 points for speaking the truth.
I read my kids the Bible every night. They're out like a light. Can't even get through Genesis.
The idea of people testing each other with trivia, in the modern sense, began in the 1960s.
Smart Alan Trebek, is that all?
Almost. The game of trivia was, there were bar quizzes and things like that, started with college students in the 60s, just basically challenging each other, betting each other, making quiz teams and things like that.
Because being drunk isn't enough, you got to be better than me.
Let's get drunk and see how much we can remember.
The first known documented use of the word trivia in this sense was in 1965.
Who wrote it down?
Jimi Hendrix.
It was in a newspaper article discussing the students doing these little contests.
And then it evolved into Trivial Pursuit, and now everybody knows what that word means.
Gold star for Jeremy. Trivial Pursuit definitely raised the profile of the word trivia.
I'm from Cleveland. We don't need to make drinking special. Games and events. It's just happening.
Your lights are trivial enough?
Exactly.
When was the game Trivial Pursuit invented?
1974.
1982.
Anyone else want to hazard a guess?
69.
I'm going to say 76.
The correct answer is 1979. The first edition.
I meant to say 79.
Oh, man. Well, I meant to give you an A, but I did not. It actually was invented in Montreal, Canada.
Was I the closest without going over?
Without going over, yes. Justin was the closest, literally.
So, are we doing Price is Right rules or no Price is Right rules?
Trivia Pursuit is from Canada?
It was originally invented in Montreal, Canada.
No wonder I hate it.
It used to come with a bottle of maple syrup. Now it just sucks.
It sucks, eh?
The game's popularity peaked in America in 1984 when over 20 million editions of the game were sold that year.
How
many were returned? Covered in your family's blood.
None. However, I'll ask you one more Trivial Pursuit question, just in case anyone knows.
Okay.
After 2008, Hasbro bought the rights to the game. You know how much they paid for it?
$1.
No. Slightly so a lot more than that.
You're just trying to not go over again. I would say $5 million.
$5 million?
No, not in that. Are you talking about the 80s or
no, saying? Just in 2008, Hasbro bought the rights, the full complete rights to the game.
If it's in the year 2000, everything is just way inflated. They probably played $100 million or something ridiculous like that.
I'm going to say $450
million. $80
million
was what they paid for.
No, wait, what
was
it?
You could buy the Browns or you could buy Trivial Pursuit?
How much was it? 80?
$80 million.
I said 50. Oh, you changed yours to 50
yeah,
and 1.
Yeah, you changed yours because you're a rebel.
I am. All right.
I have more than one answer because I'm Dr. Andy Meredith. Mm-hmm.
That was trivial of us. I'm reviewing my grade sheet right now, and I'm reminded of the famous Shakespearean quote, to be or not to be. Though if William Shakespeare could see this grade sheet, he'd say, two Fs and two more Fs. which is not as poetic, but would be scientifically accurate, or mathematically accurate.
I'm just glad that you're sexier than the woman on The Weakest Link.
Although we do wear the same glasses and have the same haircut. Let's turn our attention to sports.
Okay.
Change of pace.
Oh, good. We're gentlemen.
We are gentlemen, and this is a gentleman's sport.
A bunch of comics that suck at sports are going to talk about it.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to get better, don't worry.
We're comedians because of our love of sports.
Exactly right.
This is Olympic history.
Actually, okay. I might do well at this.
Well, you won't.
Thanks for the vote of confidence.
That's what I do. I tear my students down so I can build them back up. So here's a question. As you know, every Olympic season, the sports can change. Mm-hmm. And in the early modern Olympics, 1900 and so on, there were some different sports that we don't even have in the Olympics anymore. The sport, not that famous in America, but internationally very famous, rugby, used to be an Olympic sport.
So was painting. I kid you not.
I am skeptical
early
of that response.
1900s.
They
Olympic
haven't
sport.
Done rugby in the Olympics for many, many years.
It's Who, coming back, right?
A modified version, they call it
the
rugby sevens.
Sevens, yeah.
But the full-on rugby hasn't been played for 70, 80 years. My question, though, is, here's the question, therefore, what is the current reigning Olympic gold medalist in rugby?
New Zealand.
Hitler.
You said Hitler?
I was surprised that Dr. Meredith didn't say New Zealand and won.
Well, I got two answers. There, New Zealand and won.
Wait a minute, who's the last rugby
Olympic rugby team to win the gold?
And when did they get rid of rugby?
Well, I was going to ask you that, but I can tell you it's 1924 was the last time rugby was an Olympic sport.
Well, I can tell you it wasn't the Ethiopians. It wasn't Ghana.
It was definitely not Ghana, Ethiopia, Hitler, or whatever Jeremy just said.
Austria-Hungary.
It also was not New Zealand.
Was it Australia?
In the early modern Olympics, Australia and New Zealand fielded one team.
Oh, okay.
The Australasian team. And they did compete. I care, because I care about all of human knowledge.
You're an American now. You don't care about anything.
But you have stumbled upon an important clue. Being an American, I do care about who the current reigning Olympic gold medalist in rugby.
United States?
The United States is the current reigning Olympic gold medalist in rugby.
Again, suck it, QB.
there were hipsters in the 1920s that played rugby.
Hipster rugby?
You didn't know about this?
How do people survive that?
Our engineer Steve will be bleeping out the P word.
I thought they all liked. I thought hipsters liked soccer.
Hipsters like soccer, but hipsters that do actual drugs like rugby.
Because I always thought soccer was like the vinyl of sports. Like, as people are into it. Yeah. Just
it's a better sport, but who cares?
Yeah, exactly.
There are a couple of other interesting bits of trivia that come out of Olympic rugby. One is the leader of that U.S. team, who was called Morris Kersey, won several medals that year. And he's one of the few Americans
to have won multiple medals in completely different sports?
Rugby, painting, and track.
Here we go with painting again.
It's real. They did it.
Did you train for
He did rugby, and he won medals in track. Yes. Several track events. Mm. Not, however, painting. I may paint a gold star in the middle of your forehead if you say that one more time.
Jerry, I don't think it's appropriate for Jews to be painting gold stars.
I always thought, that makes sense, but also, that's why I don't watch the Olympics, because I don't really think most of those things aren't sports. Right. They're just competing in things you do in sports. Like, good job, Usain Bolt. Maybe catch a football and you can start making some real money. You know, but it's like anyone can just run fast in a line.
Shooting is ridiculous, too.
Yeah.
No, ping pong. Are you serious? And badminton. I mean, like, Asian culture loves these sports and are awesome at it. Just give them the gold medal when the Olympics starts.
The bird in badminton can go at over 200 miles an hour.
Whoop-dee-doo.
Speaking of the word. Usain Bolt, that does remind me of my last piece of Olympic history trivia. The first team to win the rugby at Olympics was France in the year 1900.
Then they surrendered.
Olympic gold medal. Used, never worn. That team had the first colored athlete to participate in the Olympics.
Rob told me I'm not allowed to say that word.
Is the question, what color was he?
There's a race!
Photo finish on that joke.
You owe me a beer.
It was a race, it was a color, what was it, people? Let's sort this out. And that black athlete also won a medal in another completely different sport, and this was a real
painting?
Olympic sport. Dr. Meredith, not painting, but tug of war.
Tug of war?
Tug of war was an Olympic event.
Wait.
Yes, it was.
A black guy didn't win at track.
I can't explain the anomalies of history.
Well, he's
I can
a
only.
He probably still married a white woman after the Olympics.
I do have to agree with the wisdom of bringing up obscure sports histories with four comedians.
My wife is white, but why don't you guys marry her instead?
Only
she's been a pain lately.
Only if she's heavy.
So, speaking of Rob, speaking of heavy, and looking at our classroom today, I'm going to guess that some of you like eating.
Yes.
Let's go to something a little closer to home. The stomach.
First you call them colored, then you call
them... Obama
not the president?
This is audio, too. People wouldn't even have known if you didn't point it out. It's just me.
Hello, Obama.
Is that one of those phones he gave you?
Yes. Yeah, that's why they call it the Obama phone.
Obama.
What are the five basic flavors?
Salty, sweet, bitter.
Salty, sweet, bitter,
sour. Umami.
That's
or
the other one.
Something like that.
Southwest.
Umami.
You don't get two answers, Andy.
Savory.
What's
Baja.
The answer going to be?
Umami, but I don't know if that's the correct pronunciation.
You just know it from that commercial for umami.
I know it from Reddit earlier.
Well, in this case, you can trust Reddit because the answer is umami.
Yes.
That is the fifth flavor.
I got a thing now, right? Star or something?
No, Reddit gets a gold star for that answer.
I am Reddit.
There you go, Reddit.
Reddit gold goes to whoever taught Andy that.
It is from a Japanese loan word. You know what umami translates to?
MSG.
Isn't that like...
No, not literally, although MSG is an example of the flavor of umami.
Isn't it just like delicious or something
savory.
Like that?
Savory.
Correct. Pleasant, savory taste is what umami means in English. Because umami is a Japanese word.
And it's like different places on your tongue that taste these different things too, right?
Yep.
That's not true either. They're spread out all over the tongue. There's not like those zones.
I thought there were zones.
There's not.
Is this also from Reddit?
Yes.
Well, I was interpreting Rob's observation not to mean the zones, which is, if that's what you meant, that's not quite accurate.
Oh, okay.
But just that, like you have rods and cones in your eyes, there are different sensors around your tongue.
Oh, okay.
And that's what distinguishes those five basic flavors. It is written, it is a Japanese word because it was discovered by a Japanese researcher, so he got to name it. And it is a new flavor. It's not a historic word for umami. It's a modern word. You know, approximately when it was invented or discovered?
2006.
2010
and 1?
1945, immediately after the bomb was dropped.
Can you taste it, Japan?
Flavor was never the same.
Smell bacon.
1999.
It is older than that. 1908.
1908
is when it was first introduced.
What is a new word then? If it's over 100 years.
Well, it's a matter of perspective. The other four flavors have been identified for centuries and millennia. Yeah. And then
caveman
1908.
Was like, "Ooh, that's salty."
But
no, caveman, it's
ooh, mommy, it's so good. It is. Though there was not a word or an identified sense called umami, there are foods from history that have that flavor. MSG is a kind of a famous example. No, many of them are things you might associate with Asian cooking. So,
sounds kind of like sounds like a conspiracy to me that this Japanese guy was like, "Oh, I found this new flavor. It means pleasant, tastes like everything that people that look like me make." kind of a crazy coincidence there.
It's a clever ploy to sell more luxury.
Ignorant
Western.
It's a rising sun conspiracy theory.
I invented a new flavor. It's what buffalo wings taste like. Suck that, Japanese scientist.
Yeah.
Seaweed, fish, some vegetables, some mushrooms.
So terrible.
Green tea, fermented and aged products.
Fermented, that's beer.
Fermented shark.
I heard ferment, that's beer.
Some cheese, soy sauce. There is on the list of things that are said to have umami as its flavor, though something that most people, regardless of their culture, have probably tasted at least once.
Chicken? Is that why everything tastes like it?
Yeah, you know.
See, that's just it's a synonym for chicken. Yeah.
See, clean,
that's right.
Cleaned it up.
Your previous answer was about cats.
Yeah.
Yes. Another naturally occurring example of umami that most humans, regardless of culture, have sampled is breast milk.
Wow, really?
According
that's
to umami.
Just
the other night. That was good.
That's not the first thing I think of when I drink breast milk.
Isn't all milk breast milk? Just depends on the breast, right? Like the milk you drink, that's just cow's breast milk.
I don't know, if your girlfriend's boob had six nipples on each of them, would you call it a breast?
Yeah, that's pretty different.
If my girlfriend's breast had six nipples, I wouldn't be here. I mean,
six nipples.
Imaginary girlfriends are the best girlfriends.
Shut up.
I'll stick to my emotional girlfriend thing.
Yeah.
Well, having covered sports history, science, and the trivia of the word trivia, as I review the grades so far, I'll have to say that Justin is currently leading the competition for the Golden Banana after his Japanese flavor conspiracy theory. Dr. Meredith,
where am I at?
Race does not enter into it.
Uh-huh.
As far as the Golden Banana?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I'm darker than that. I don't even know what that means. I don't know what that means.
Let me ask you, we're going to go into one more topic. We're at the Cleveland Comedy Festival. Cleveland is part of what is sometimes referred to as the Great North Coast.
I've never heard that ever.
Not the Great North Coast.
I don't hang out with Canadians.
Well, I believe Canadians call it the Great South Coast.
They don't know direction.
Their mare smokes crack. What are they going to do?
Once you go far enough north.
The mayor of Canada.
Did you see that? You saw that?
Well, that's somewhere. What smoking crack will do for you.
I'm the mayor of Canada.
You know, when they said the mayor was caught smoking crack, I was like, oh, no, not again. And then I found out he was white. I was like, yes! Thank you, Obama.
Well, not white, Canadian.
Are Canadians not white? Am
we
I
don't
claim
something?
Them.
Yeah.
Don't claim white.
Canadians
don't claim
are
Canadians.
Like the south of the north.
Hey, I'm black. If it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck.
It looks like a duck and talks like a white person.
Speaking of the Great North Coast, me being the only one who's ever heard that expression before, my question would be this. What do you know about the Edmund Fitzgerald?
I know, it's a really, really bad song by Gordon Lightfoot.
You both scored points because you're both correct.
I don't know.
It's a great beer.
You've heard of either the song or the ship before, haven't you?
I've heard of the beer.
It sunk in the Battle of Lake Erie, right?
No. It did not sink in the Battle of Lake Erie.
Well, I'm going to sink it. Starting a new battle.
What is it, the Gordon what?
No, the ship is not called the Gordon Lightfoot. The musician is called the Gordon Lightfoot. The and ship is called Canadians. The Edmund Fitzgerald.
Edmund Fitzgerald, yeah. I heard of Ella Fitzgerald.
She should have died on that boat.
She's unsinkable.
Yeah, leave Ella alone. She's good.
Now, when it did famously sink, it's the single largest maritime disaster on the Great Lakes.
Mm. Yeah. The only maritime.
Not the Bronze.
another joke race.
Oh, did I get you?
Clearly beat me there. Sorry, no one wasn't even close. No. Good on you. Good on you.
Speaking of the song, which of course elevated the fame of the maritime incident, the song has several historical inaccuracies in it.
What a surprise.
Gordon Lightfoot had trouble composing the song because he couldn't get the facts to fit his rhyming scheme. And a friend reminded him, you are a storyteller. You can just make it work. So he made
Here's
little
the
changes.
M&M of his day.
The song, The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, reached number one on the Canadian charts. How high did it reach on the American Billboard?
No way.
26.
I've never heard of this song before.
I'm going to say it got to number 15.
What do you think, Rob?
5.
Number 2. It reached number 2 okay. on Billboard charts.
Well, right. That's appropriate because I've heard the song and it's about number 2.
That way to keep it clean. Who thought Jeremy Shearer would be the one to keep it clean?
Yeah,
on the
how is this? I am keeping it clean and Andy
also, somehow you're the one with restraint. It's a whammy.
I have a bad feeling that if I keep asking you questions about the Edmund Fitzgerald, we're just helping you destroy your own grades.
Wait, was it a passenger ship or was it like a warship?
Kind of ship was it? Yeah.
It was a transport ship.
I'm actually straight up interested
that
in this.
Thank you, sir. It's interesting. Plus 5 points for an appropriate level of brown nosing.
What do I get for an inappropriate level?
Well, we don't know.
I think your nose would smell like number 2 at that point.
It was a transporter. It mostly carried iron ore. It traveled the lengths back and forth on the Great Lakes, picking up ore in Wisconsin and then delivering it in ports around Lake Erie.
Or was it?
Yes, it was.
Did you say picking up ore?
Yes.
Okay. I thought it.
You left a W on.
That was one of the historical inaccuracies is that, according to the song, the ship is heading to Cleveland when it sinks. But in fact, it was heading to Detroit when it sank.
No one's going to Cleveland.
Well, there's no surf in Cleveland, USA, which is a much better song.
What sunk it? Like, did somebody attack it in Lake Erie?
It sunk in a question. Does anyone know what sunk it?
The Nessie.
I'm going to say a bunch of merchant marines were drunk and started fire in the engine room.
Somali pirates?
Mike Brown was the captain of the ship. I don't know.
There was a great storm. It was lost in a storm. I believe the song refers to it as a November gale or November storm. No, not November
also
rain.
Also a better song than the record.
Every time I go to a strip club and get a private dance, I always hope November Rain will come on, and it never does.
You go to the right club, you can make
the best. All comes on this Bands Make Her Dance, huh? Yeah. Juicy J.
I just want Child in Time. That's 10 minutes.
The
International Lover, Prince.
There are other historical inaccuracies in the song.
Okay.
There is a reference to an old cook, but in fact, the Edmund Fitzgerald had a replacement cook on that voyage, so it wasn't the ship's old cook.
And that was Ella Fitzgerald.
Ella Fitzgerald can cook.
That
I've
was
never known
Cleveland,
her too, cook.
Cleveland native Chef Boyardee.
There's a reference in the song to a memorial. And in the song, it's referred to as the Maritime Sailors Cathedral, but that's not the correct name of the church that has the memorial in it. In fact, they still have that memorial every year, even still today. I say still today, we didn't establish when the ship actually sank. Anyone know when the Edmund Fitzgerald sank?
1918.
No.
You sounded so confident.
1919. 1920.
1895.
No. It was much more recent than that. Much more recent than the discovery of umami.
1950.
I'm going to say 1971.
1960. 1975. Jeremy's answer is the closest. Okay. When the ship was commissioned, it was the largest transport ship on the Great Lakes.
That oars could get on.
That oars. Okay.
Fat lot of good that did them, right?
It was over 700 feet long. Is quite massive.
Size doesn't.
Now it's 700 feet tall.
It does say in the song where it sank. Does anyone know where it sank? You can actually visit. It's
Lake
like
Erie?
A kind of tourism. It's. It
put
did sink
bay.
In Lake Erie. It was not put in Bay. Whitefish Bay.
Catawba.
Whitefish Bay.
Whitefish Bay.
Whitefish Bay.
Yeah, that sounds like I want to go there.
Oh, you like the whitefish too?
I don't.
Why
is it always? Why is it always color with you guys?
The blackfish is like, you gonna leave me for that whitefish?
Well, you'll enjoy the red ink from my grading pen while I'm grading your paper. I'm gonna use my colored pen to grade you.
Hey.
Speaking of grading you, we've come to the part of the class where I review my grade sheet, determine grades, and award the golden banana to today's top pupil. Before I do that, however,
thank you, everybody.
You each get a chance for some extra credit. So we'll go around the table one more time, and you can impart any bit of wisdom that you would like for extra credit.
Oh, okay.
Dr. Meredith, I expect you to keep it clean. Justin, would you like to
bleach? Oh,
anything about anything?
Yes, this is just extra credit, open field question.
Oh man,
something interesting, or ask a question, or
I remember speaking of great ship battles on Lake Erie or great ship things. I went to Put-in Bay last summer, mm-hmm. And I learned about Commodore Perry and the mm-hmm. battle he was in. Uh-huh. From a dude who had clearly been burned severely recently on half of his body. So it was real hard to pay attention, but I learned a lot.
Just one thing you learned about?
No, like, because, I mean, most of the time I was like, don't look at this dude's face because it's burned bad. But I learned that Commodore Perry, he won Put-in Bay. So that, I don't know. All white right. trash can pretend they're in Hawaii during summer vacation.
Pretend they're in Hawaii.
All right. Formidable Dr. Meredith, top that.
If you mix ammonia and bleach, it makes mustard gas.
I doubt the accuracy of that statement.
Totally true.
Mr. Coleman, any extra credit for you?
The Great Lakes are not actually lakes by definition. They're seas. You know, I never realized that, but we mistakenly as American call them lakes, and they're really not.
Can you identify the defining feature of a sea for us?
Depth, yeah. Right?
Yeah, the depth, and you can't see the other side or something like that. It's like, yeah, and a lake you should supposed to be able to see the other side of it.
Okay.
So technically we are on the border of the Sea Erie, but it just never caught on. So Lake Erie is what we
use. I blame
use.
The Canadians.
Yeah, the Canadians. It's them, Ed. Yeah. The mayor smokes crack. What are you going to do?
Right up there, Canada.
Mr. Shear, any extra credit for you?
Umami is actually, the word came into effect when the inventor actually tasted his first Canadian lady parts.
Pickled moose knuckle.
And after which he immediately invented MSG.
Try to make the pickled moose knuckle taste better.
Right. Well, after adding in your extra credit and calculating all the grades, I've determined that Dr. Meredith is not winning the golden banana.
Mm. I got to start there. Why can't Jeremy, someone else just win? Why
you gotta, I was looking at you.
Jeremy is not going to win the golden banana, though. Afterwards, he'll think that he did.
It's down to me and you.
Well,
let's do it.
Justin did have the highest numerical grade, but after we put in the Obama fudge factor, I have to give...
You're giving a black guy a banana. Good for you.
Affirmative action.
Oh, you liberal queer.
Therefore, today's golden banana goes to Mr. Rob Coleman. Hey. Thank you very much, and congratulations, Mr. Coleman.
I appreciate that.
That leaves it for me, your host, to thank you, my guests, Justin, Rob, Jeremy, and Andy.
Dr. Andy.
For coming to today's episode of Gold Star Classroom. I'm Jerry Jaffe. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Woo!
Gold Star Classroom is written and produced by Jerry Jaffe. Our producer and engineer is Stephen Gutierrez. Original music composed and produced by Jeff Gettert. Mr. Gettert is also our assistant producer. All commentary and opinions expressed by guests of Gold Star Classroom are meant for entertainment purposes only. For Gold Star Classroom, I'm Jerry Jaffe.